November 30th, 2017. Welcome back to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. Got Matt Norlander here with me, and this is the second of three podcasts we're going to do this week. So if you haven't subscribed yet, go make sure to do that over at iTunes. Rate it favorably. Continue to write great things about me in the comments. Five stars and great things about GP. That's what we're looking for. And while you're doing that, we'll discuss the latest in college basketball. Let's just start, Norlander, with the ACC Big Ten Challenge. It hadn't been much of a challenge for the ACC historically, and especially this year, because the ACC's already wrapped it up. I don't know if they have a trophy, but if they do, it will reside in Greensboro for another year, because I think right now Big Ten is down 11-2 in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. And while that may or may not mean anything, it does serve as a reminder that the Big Ten's not off to a great start this season, is it?
It's off to a really bad start relative to expectations. Ranked fifth in KenPom overall in conference standings. The only teams that have a win in this challenge, we're recording this Thursday afternoon, so Michigan State hasn't played yet, are Purdue, which got a needed win against Louisville, and Nebraska, which beat Boston College. Every other team that is participating in this is 0-4. Big month coming up here in December for the Big Ten, and it's a weird month because league play starts this weekend. We opted not to do our conference champion predictions in the preseason. We're like, let's just wait until conference play starts. Well, conference play frickin' starts in like 2 days. So we're going to have that up at CBSSports.com pretty soon here. Safe to say, I think we're all going to be picking Michigan State to win the Big Ten because it has clearly been the best team so far in this conference. Purdue is, I still have a lot of confidence in what they can do. Minnesota dropped an opportunity at home against Miami on Wednesday night, and Minnesota has looked relatively strong, even though it did get outscored 3-on-5 against Alabama over the weekend. But other teams like Maryland, who you saw at the Emerald Coast Classic, 6-2 at this point. Wisconsin is 3-4. I mean, it's been an ice age since Wisconsin had its fan base wondering about the NCAA tournament at this stage with a plus a sub-500 record. Obviously, when Bo Ryan retired, there were questions about whether the team would make the tournament, but at least they were above 500 at that point a couple years ago. Michigan got its doors blown off against North Carolina on Wednesday. That was a close game for the first half, and then UNC cured itself from its horrific showing at the PK80 and wound up looking like the Carolina team that is rightfully in the top 15. Northwestern hasn't been able to handle success and expectations to this point. Ohio State blew a double-digit lead for the second straight game. Indiana looked as good as you could have expected Indiana to play against Duke, given its personnel. Shout out to Duke for, I guess, covering the 8.5 because it was a 75-all game. And then Blue Devils just went on a big run there at the end to separate itself. But most people didn't expect Indiana to win that game. I think the Hoosiers fans will take what they got there, but can't play for 40 minutes with that talent level. No big shocker there overall. But, yeah, for the Big Ten, I think we're still 3 weeks or so away from having a real conversation about its NCAA tournament prospects, big picture. But I think it is safe to say at this stage, when you've got a lot of teams that have already taken on 3 losses, Wisconsin's taken on 4 losses, and there is not one undefeated team left in the conference, I think that getting 7 or 8 teams in the tournament is probably a pipe dream at this point. I think you're gonna hit your ceiling at 6, all things considered, right now.
So there were 4 teams in the preseason top 25 from the Big Ten: Michigan State, Purdue, Minnesota, and Northwestern. Michigan State, I think, lived up to expectations. They lost that close game to Duke in the Champions Classic. Other than that, looked terrific, and that's even with Miles Bridges being hampered by that ankle. But Purdue took 2 losses at the Battle for Atlantis that I don't think we expected them to take. Minnesota is, I think, fine, but they did just lose a home game to Miami. Other than that, has been, I think, probably better than folks expected. And Jordan Murphy has been absolutely terrific, just double-double after double-double after double-double. But Northwestern's been an obvious disappointment. Like you said, Wisconsin down. Maryland has now lost 2 of its past 3 games to unranked opponents, first to St. Bonaventure down in Florida, then to a Syracuse team that might be better than we anticipated but still isn't supposed to be great. Michigan just got ran off the court in Chapel Hill on Wednesday night. Iowa's got a loss to South Dakota State Ohio State is, you know, in a transition year under first-year head coach Chris Holtmann, and Indiana obviously in a transition year as well. But I still think Michigan State's fine, everything that we thought they would be. But you're exactly right. Like, you could at least kind of envision a scenario where they might have challengers in the Big Ten, say, a month ago. But right now, of the major conferences, you'd probably feel most safe picking Michigan State as the champion as you would anybody else in any other league, right?
Definitely. Definitely seems to be the case right now, because I actually think Miami's got a pretty solid shot at giving Duke a good push in the ACC. Villanova looks like a pretty determined favorite in the Big East right now. They're still undefeated, but they still, like, you know, Xavier, Seton Hall, that, like, they, I could still see situations where they get challenged. Obviously, the Pac-12 seems like a total freaking toss-up at this point. We'll see if Arizona can right itself. Obviously, Kansas every single season looks like an overwhelming favorite, and that appears to be the case yet again. But I think Michigan State and Kansas are pretty much on an even plane right now. Let's allow ourselves to see what happens with December, and they've also got the weird scheduling kink there with the Big Ten starting league play, just a couple of games this weekend for all teams involved, and then they go back to some non-conference play. You mix in finals with all of that. So there's plenty of time left for the league to get some necessary out-of-conference wins here, but we are essentially at the point where we've played more than half of the non-conference schedule, and so I don't think that the Big Ten can change its big picture trajectory at this point. And this ACC Big Ten challenge is the defining event here that's showing you the harsh light on the league, and that it's not as good as it's been in years past. But long term, if Purdue and Minnesota can turn themselves and or change themselves into consistent top 25 teams, and Michigan State can get to a Final Four, you do that, you know, the Big Ten will end up looking okay come the tournament. But yeah, this is going to be a soft middle and a soggy bottom for this league this season.
And Northwestern, like I said, preseason top 20 team, they've now got three losses on their resume. And their losses to a Creighton team that was unranked in the preseason, a Texas Tech team that was unranked in the preseason, and a Georgia Tech team that was unranked in the preseason and remains that way and was missing one of its best players in Josh Okogie. And so I know Creighton is now, at least in my top 25 and one. Texas Tech is obviously better than most anticipated, nationally ranked at this point, at least in my top 25 and one. But having three losses to three teams that were unranked in the preseason before December 1st even hits, that suggests that, yeah, I guess they can still turn it around and get to the NCAA tournament, but they don't look like they're going to live up to the preseason expectations of being a legitimate top 20 team in America.
No, they don't. They lose to Georgia Tech on the road by one. That really stings, because the road win would have been pretty pivotal there and pretty crucial to its resume. They have two more opportunities here. What's interesting coming up in December, because I do like the way that Chris Collins scheduled. He's still got to go to Oklahoma. They got to play DePaul. It's a little bit of a slippery game. They got a nice home game versus Valpo. So Northwestern challenged itself in the non-conference. And if it's able to get one or two, like beat Valpo and get DePaul or Oklahoma, get one of those two on the road. You get both, that's ideal. But you get one of those two, it's going to wind up being pretty important, because they won't have too much else to boast about in the non-conference. And then you're going to rely on the Big Ten, which is not going to be great. So, yeah, if you're able to steal a game versus Minnesota, Purdue, or Michigan State, that's going to be fine and all. But the league beating, you know, what's going to end up being the 7th, 8th, 9th best team in the Big Ten, I don't think that those wins are going to wind up being slotted into advantageous positions when the committee's evaluating you. So things are already urgent for Northwestern. There's no doubt about it.
You mentioned Oklahoma. I didn't plan to talk about this, but they were out in Portland with you at the PK80. Did you get a chance to see Trae Young?
I did get a chance to see Trae Young, and I'll spill the beans a little bit here. I got a chance to sit down with an hour for Trae Young, so I will have something next week on him. I talked to him before he went off for 43 against Oregon, and he is terrific. It's interesting, because I did not in any way, and I don't think Oklahoma did either. And I don't know if you were just specifically leading with Trae Young here or what, but I knew that he would be able to score like immediately at the college level. But if I'm being totally truthful, I thought Trae Young was going to enter college, put up 15 a game as a freshman, which is outstanding, and be a pretty reliable first year player. He is turning into a top three freshman in America at this point. His 3-point shooting is obviously really, really good. I don't think when I interviewed him, he wasn't at like a 40% clip or anything like that, but he's not afraid. He certainly got the green light, but he's going to get all the pub for how he shoots. And I get that he's a pretty good creator. And he's not afraid to drive. He's not a huge player, but he's also not that tiny. So he's a pretty good distributor. I think he's a true scoring point guard. Like, I don't even think I'd label him as a combo guard. Like, he can score it, but he likes to distribute it as well. And because he's on this team, yeah, Oklahoma's got a really good shot at being a return tournament team after having that down year. One last note I'll just include here is that I asked Long Kruger, and I don't know if this will make the story or not, but you got Trey scoring like this, you're going to obviously have people thinking, okay, well, you know, the next Buddy Hield kind of thing. And Kruger said, they're not really similar players. And the way that I've built my offense and the way that what I did for Buddy, who was so much more off the ball, a ton off the ball, in fact, it's not the same way that we're using Trey. So yeah, they're similar in that they're going to be putting up big numbers for the Sooners. But the way that the offensive style for each player is actually not all that similar.
He's got a usage rate that's in the top 10 in the country, shooting 39% from three, 57% from two. Obviously, I had that 40-point game. I think Bagley is the leading candidate for National Player of the Year, Freshman of the Year, everything right now. Marvin Bagley, of course, the tremendous, likely one-and-done forward from Duke. But Trey Young has been spectacular. And I guess I would ask you this question. I updated my 2018 NBA mock draft earlier this week. I did not have Trey Young in the top 30. Should I have Trey Young in the top 30?
I think it's going to get there. I also was there to just pick the brains of evaluators and scouts on hand. And it's a little weird to me how his size is being used against him. I think at this stage, maybe more than it should. I mean, he's not tiny.
He's 6'2". He's 6'2". He's like, is that a midget?
Exactly.
Can you use the word midget anymore?
What's up?
Are you allowed to use the word midget anymore? Did I just...
I honestly, I have no idea, to be honest.
All right. Well, if I need to apologize to short... I am short. I think if anybody could use the word midget, it'd be me. Carry on.
So he's not, but yeah, he's not a small dude. And so it seems like his, and I think he might have like a 6'4 wingspan, something like that. And we know how important wingspans are with everyone. So I think we are getting to the point where he needs to be strongly considered, not, you know, definitively put in these mock draft first rounds, but I think he's, his ability to score and to run an offense, I think we're getting there. I don't think you're out of bounds putting him outside the top 30. Cause if we had a draft, I don't know how you evaluate a GP, if it's truly like a projection come June or in the here and the now. If we had a draft here and now, I'm not convinced that Trey Young would be a top 30 pick. Let's talk in 3 weeks. Things might change. I think scouts want to see a little bit more of what he can do defensively, but they do like the fact that he is willing to drive the ball, can distribute well, and certainly is not short on confidence, but certainly become already a top five type player. You hear the Steph Curry comparisons tossed out with him a lot. I asked him about that. I'll save that stuff for the story itself, but we certainly touched on his feelings about being compared to Steph, whether that's right, wrong, or accurate.
Yeah, I mean, he's 6'2", like I said, and that might prevent him from being whatever it is people might want him to be at the NBA level, but he's 5 inches taller than Devin Downey, and Devin Downey obviously was the player who delivered the first loss of John Calipari's career at Kentucky. That was on January 26, 2010, when he got 30 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals at a 68-62 upset of John Wall's UK Wildcats. So if Devin Downey could do that at 5'9", there's absolutely no reason Trey Young can't just wreak havoc on the Big 12 throughout January, February, and March. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle, the legend. Let me tell you about SeatGeek, which is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. That's what I learned over the years, thanks to SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience that allows you to buy and sell tickets in just 2 taps. And the good news is right now, if you download that app, use the promo code COLLEGEBB, you're going to get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase just by using that promo code COLLEGEBB. And I don't mean just for a basketball game. I mean a football game, a concert, anything that requires you to purchase a ticket to enter the building, the stadium, the arena, you can get that ticket through that SeatGeek app. So make sure you've downloaded the app. It makes for a nice Christmas present as well, a holiday treat for that special person in your life. You want to buy them tickets to something? Make sure to use the SeatGeek app. And what SeatGeek does is it searches multiple ticket sites for you, compares prices, so make sure you're finding the best deal available. You don't have to search five different sites anymore. SeatGeek will handle that for you, so you're saving time and you're saving money just by using that promo code COLLEGEBB. That's SeatGeek, millions of tickets in one place. Norlander pop quiz.
Love it. Let's do it.
The nation's longest winning streak belongs to?
Okay. I believe, if my memory serves correct, this has got to be, I'm allowing the listeners time to think and respond, but I think it is TCU, because did they not win the NIT, and are they not still undefeated?
The Horned Frogs did win the NIT. They are undefeated. They have won 12 straight games dating back to last season, and I bring them up just because it's a remarkable story. I mean, that's a program with almost no history whatsoever, at least nothing to speak of. They get into the Big 12, and they commit the resources to the program, and they go out and hire Jamie Dixon away from Pitt, and he obviously, I think, overachieved last season to get that NIT title, and now he's got a legitimate top 25 team. And what's wild is that if you look at his roster, Jalen Fisher, who they got in the late period after, you know, like right after he got hired at TCU, Desmond Bane, they got in the late period right after he got hired at TCU, Kenrich Williams is somebody who had zero Division I scholarship offers coming out of high school. And those names I just listed, those are three of TCU's top five scores. So recruiting is now operating at a historical best level for that program. And Jalen Fisher was a consensus top, you know, 125 player in the country. But to be able to be doing this with a roster of mostly unheralded guys is pretty impressive work for Jamie and that staff. And it's just something, it's a reminder of something I've said a million times. With few exceptions at the Power 5 level, maybe even Power 6 or Power 7 if you want to get into that, with few exceptions, if you invest the resources in a basketball program and then hire the right guy, you can win. It's not quite as easy to do it on the football side of things, but in basketball, you can get things done, and they've got a nice team at TCU right now. I saw them twice over the weekend. I don't know if they're a real challenger to Kansas in the Big 12, but they're going to finish, you know, in the top, you know, 3, 4, 5 in that league. They're going to be in the NCAA tournament. I'd be surprised if they're not.
Yeah, shout out to Kurt Thomas. I think the last time TCU had someone, or I guess had as much buzz. Well, they made the NCAAs in 1998. Kurt Thomas wasn't with the team at that point, but Kurt Thomas obviously went on to have a pretty solid NBA career. And if I remember correctly, I think he led the country in scoring and was close in leading in rebounding. I remember there being like a whole thing, because I didn't know who the hell he was when he came into the NBA, but he was like this college beast. They are good this season. Have a shot, I think. Let me bring up the schedule real quick here, GP. So they've refreshed listeners' memories. They've beaten Tennessee Tech, South Dakota, New Mexico. Bonaventure's a solid win. They just took out Belmont. That's a good win, even though it was at home for TCU. Belmont's a solid team. They have Yale next on Saturday. Then they get SMU, and that's going to be a TCU home game. And then they get Nevada on a neutral out in L.A. So if they can get through that, they've got a decent shot at going undefeated in conference play. That would be a pretty huge story. And we'll know that by December 22nd. That's their final non-con game. That's against William and Mary, outside of when they have to play Vandy in the Big 12 SEC Challenge at the end of January. But a quality team right now, and I believe in them, certainly as an NCAA tournament team. Like, I think they're going to be a single-digit seed. I want to see how they are able to handle success, and when they go up against some serious teams, how they can do, because we just don't know yet. I mean, they were a solid bounce-back team last season. Dixon's been a quality coach. We've known that for a while. But it is cool to have, at least for me, like as a media person who's always looking for just different things to happen in a given season, I always like that the Blue Bloods are good. Don't get me wrong. But when we can get teams in these major conferences that have had these droughts for a long, long time, and then all of a sudden, oh, they're top 25 good. That at least it peppers in some difference from year to year in college basketball, and I'm liking what TCU is providing here. I think they are on their way to a pretty successful season, but I don't know yet if they are truly like a top 20 team or not.
So we had Tim Floyd announce his retirement earlier in the week, and then on Wednesday, East Carolina announced that Jeff Lebo will not continue as its head coach. He's completed 19 seasons as a Division I head coach, never actually made the NCAA tournament. One argument in his favor would be, yeah, but he had bad jobs relative to the leagues every single time, which is, I guess, accurate. But every school that he's coached at has made the NCAA tournament before, and yet he was never able to get there. You don't get many guys 19 years as a Division I head coach who never actually make the NCAA tournament, so that'll be part of Jeff Lebo's resume forever, assuming that he doesn't get another Division I job. And I guess I'd be surprised if he did, but who knows? There's 350 something of those jobs. Maybe he lands one somewhere down the line. Before we get out of here, big game, and we touched on it earlier in the podcast, scheduled for Thursday night, ACC Big Ten Challenges, Notre Dame at Michigan State, two top five teams. And so this should be terrific television. Do you just go with the home team here in Orlando?
I do. This is tremendous. I mean, to get, I feel like we get maybe one of these a year, GP, on a true roadie, like a true, not like, you know, Champions Classic or any neutral floor tournament, to get an on-campus game between two teams ranked in the top five in non-conference play. This is great. Really looking forward to it. Michigan State does have the benefit of getting this game in East Lansing. Notre Dame's got a lot of good offense. They're both coming off tournament championship runs, Michigan State at the PK80, and then Notre Dame famously in Maui, where Mike Bray decided to go topless in the post game, which is terrific. I'll take Michigan State. I do wonder, Izzo said that Bridges wasn't 100% in Portland. Maybe he's still not there. Maybe he doesn't need to be there tonight. I do like, give me Michigan State, like 79-74 in a pretty fun one. I'll take Sparty.
Yeah, I think this is one where you got comparable teams, and anytime you got comparable teams, your safest bet is probably just taking the home team. So you play this thing at Notre Dame, give me Notre Dame. You play it in East Lansing, I'll take Michigan State. I think you play it on a neutral, I take Michigan State just barely. But yeah, the home team should have the advantage here. And my God, the Big Ten sure does need it, because if your far and away conference favorite loses to an ACC school that isn't picked to win the ACC, or even finish in the top two or maybe even three in the ACC, you lose at home to that. It really does start to put an even bigger stain on that league. So Michigan State needs it for the obvious reasons, but the Big Ten just needs some good news. And so perhaps they get it tonight. That game, of course, will be on ESPN, and we'll talk about it a little bit more later on this week when we look back on it on what will be the third podcast of the week. We'll record that, what do you think, Friday or Saturday?
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out on the fly. I think our Friday nights might be a little bit complicated here. So either we go see, you got the radio show though. So yeah, honestly, like it's either way late Friday or Saturday morning. One of the two.
Yeah.
Maybe Tennessee will have a head coach by then, by the way.
Yeah. I'm not trying to spend my Friday night talking to you on Skype. So we'll either do it tomorrow. We'll either do a Friday afternoon or Saturday morning. And perhaps the Tennessee football program will have a coach by then. Boy, they going through it.
We actually got to get out here. We're kind of tight. But, GP, last head coaching search in college basketball that compares to what Tennessee's going through. Can you even remember one? I know there have been some crazy ones, but I don't know if I can remember. There probably is one, but off the top of my head, like anything. Remove the side that the fans didn't let Schiano happen. Like, that's never happened in college basketball. But when you look at just, like, everything else involved with it and how they're just going after name publicly and getting shut down, anything popped to mind in the past, like, 5, 6, 7 years?
I don't know if it was 5, 6, 7 years, but when Arkansas, like, had its sights set on Billy Gillespie, and then he ended up taking Kentucky, and they were just in total scramble mode, that one got a little wild. And I guess it led to John Pelfrey getting the job, maybe? I think that's the way it went.
That all coincide with Altman not taking it? Like, did Gillespie turn it down? Altman actually technically took it and then left like within 48 hours.
I think that one was pretty crazy. The Memphis one replacing John Calipari was kind of circus. Yeah, it was right. It was all over the place. I mean, like, they had boosters trying to hire Billy Donovan and Rick Pitino and all sorts of guys.
Did not have dudes like turning the job down like the way that Tennessee he just got turned down by Dave Doran.
I mean, what is going on? I mean, that's a program that has won a national championship in my adult life, and Dave Doran just gave you the double bird. So I don't know what's happening in Tennessee. They'll get a coach eventually. I'm just not real sure when. Remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast via iTunes. So please go do that. It makes a difference. We appreciate it. And then know that we'll be back very, very soon, either Friday afternoon or Saturday morning, but under no circumstances, late Friday night. Till then, take care.